Welcome, Jen Choi and Beatrice Zornak. Great to have you on this call today. And we'll be talking about your work with Support Haven. And thank you so much for being part of this. Perhaps we could just start by introducing yourself, saying a bit about yourself, your coaching background, your professional background, what's brought you here today. So Jen, do you want to kick off?
Sure. So I'm Jen M. Choi. The reason I say M is there's a lot of Jen Choi's in the world. But yeah, I'm an empowerment coach. I empower real humans to design a life and work that they dream of. Prior to that, I ran a marketing consultancy for 5 years and also love working on nonprofit stuff and have been volunteer on numerous nonprofits for the past 10 years. And I'm also a writer and public content creator, love sharing tips and inspiration and travel adventures. So that's me in a nutshell.
Thank you, Jen. And Beatrice.
That's a big introduction to follow up on. I am Beatrice. My journey with Animas started about 2 years ago. And so for over a year, I've been a full-time transformational coach. I specialize in working with highly sensitive people who are going through career transitions and starting their own business. My business is called Fall in Love with Work because that's ultimately what I want to support people to do. And my previous life was quite eclectic, but my last role was head of people in an HR startup, head of people in a marketing startup. Hmm.
Excellent. Thank you, Beatrice. Okay, guys, so I first became aware of you in any significant sense when we had that joint call some months ago when you reached out to me about what you're doing with Support Haven, and I was really impressed, blown away by not only what you'd been doing, but also the level of thinking behind it. So today's conversation is really going to be about Support Haven and how it came to be and what you did with it, and you know, all the challenges you faced, but also what sustained you through that, and you know, what came out of it and all that kind of stuff. But perhaps to set the context, perhaps you guys could just share what was stroke is Support Haven and a little bit of background to that.
And thank you for that reflection that you felt it was an inspiring or well put together initiative. And it's really interesting. It just started as when lockdown started, I feel that there was a lot of uncertainty, a lot of unknown. People didn't know what was going on. There was a lot of fear as well. And I think it's really interesting that many people have just mobilized to want to help in some way. And I feel that we noticed this within the coaching community because obviously most, if not all, the coaches in our community want to make an impact in the world. I feel that we just verbalized what everyone was sort of thinking. So when we came up with the idea that maybe we should do something, everyone just jumped at the opportunity and wanted to join. So this is, in a nutshell, how it sort of started.
Yeah. And to add on to that, thank you so much for setting the stage, Beatrice. What it was, you know, I'm sticking to my marketing messages over here, was a global crisis response, really. Support Haven was a global crisis response initiative that provided practical emotional support to people all over the world who were feeling challenged by COVID-19. And together we had a database of over 100 coaches who provided practical tools and hope in a really uncertain and crazy time.
Great. Thanks, Jen. So let me just kind of get this straight. There was a point where it didn't exist, like everything, including the universe. There was a point where it didn't exist, and then something happened, and we call that thing the lockdown. And there was this sort of sense of somebody needed to do something, or at least somebody needed to do something as well as other people. I'm curious, like what do you think the quality is that meant that you guys stepped forward? Because in a sense, Beatrice, you're right. Pretty much every coach wants to make a difference in the world. So I'm curious, what made you feel this desire to step forward and be those people that led something?
Wow, that is such a good question. that I haven't even thought about that. I'm in a way, I feel like this is something that was, it's almost like we were asked to do it. It's not like we discussed and we were like, we need to start an initiative and we need to do something. It was just naturally, I think it was just an initial conversation that people were having on the in our Facebook group in the Animas Lounge. And all of a sudden, this feeling emerged of wanting to support in some way. And I don't know how we ended up leading it, if I'm honest. I just feel that everything came together in such a way that we ended up leading it.
I would agree with Beatrice, and I would say, like, as she explained, we got called to do it. It just seemed like the right time in our lives. And we had met each other only days before we started this initiative. So I think the universe had aligned for us to meet and to be a channel for this energy, this positivity, this drive, this heart that our community of coaches had expressed. And so it just seemed natural. And having been on previous nonprofit or community service things before, what people often need is some structure and a little bit of guidance. And once the structure is there, people can really excel. So I think that's what we just were called. We were called. It was just meant to be.
So the reason why I asked that question, I guess, is because I suspect there are a lot of people, a lot of coaches who feel they want to make an impact. And maybe a question they have is, but am I the right person? Like, who am I to think I can to do, you know, do this? I mean, when you describe Support Haven, Jen, you describe it as a global crisis response. Was that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
That takes some big thinking and some chutzpah to say that's going to be me that leads that. And I'm just wondering how, maybe you don't have an answer for this, but I'm just wondering, like, what enables you to trust yourself in a sense that we can do this?
I think we were able to trust that we can do this because everything just seemed to align. And Beatrice and I can tell you, finding a team member who we just finished each other's sentences. I think the fact that Beatrice and I were so aligned, and we LOL all the time in our chats, because like, she'll type something and I was like, oh my God, typing the same thing at the same time. And I think our chemistry and our built trust over time really allowed us to have the balls or the bravery to support this. And we were galvanized by our coaches who also believed that we could together do this. Beatrice is amazing at community. She's like, when she speaks, she's just so soothing and in such a time of crisis. And I'm very entrepreneurial minded. And I think we both complemented each other. And I think that's what gave us the trust that we could do it. But yeah, Beatrice, if you wanted to add anything.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. And thank you for the nice compliments. But I think it's not that, at least for me, speaking for myself, it's not that I don't experience moments of doubting myself, because I do, I am human, but I think that everything just happened so quickly. Essentially, within the space of, you know, at 12 p.m., the idea didn't exist, and by 4 p.m., we already had like 100 people signing up, we were making plans, we were creating structures and things like that, so we didn't have time to doubt ourselves. We just, it just everything fell into place. So I think that gave us trust and also the inspiration and that the initial momentum that was built within the community.
Yeah, I mean, as an entrepreneur, I really, really understand that. And it's interesting. I mean, the lesson I would draw from that, and I'm not saying this is the lesson, but certainly I would say a lesson, is when you feel something, act upon it, rather than thinking yourself out of it. And you did, it sounds to me like you did a really great job in just going, we've got this idea, let's do it. Whoa, now what do we do? You know, how do we move it forward? So and you almost like commit through the action itself.
Yeah, I think it's we took a very design thinking methodology kind of approach where you just build and we're biased to action. Yeah. What's the worst that could possibly happen? You know, if we didn't do it, it wouldn't even exist. So
yeah. Now, before I go into the next stage of how did you do it, I just want to get clear on the end product, let's say. You described it, Jen, very nicely. But in terms of, you've got these 100 people on a directory and you've got this whole world who are in lockdown and struggling. How did you connect those two bits? What was the process for how you got the help to where it was needed?
Do you want to start, Jen?
Sure. I can always talk build and process. So, when we're talking about how it gets started and the key steps along the way, you know, Beatrice's post in the Animus Lounge was like a flint, a spark that started the fire. And then after that, we created a Facebook group almost the same day. We created a Facebook group so the coaches could join. And then we decided, hey, we're really in it as co-founders or co-facilitators or whatever we wanted to call ourselves. And then we recruited 17 team members, including us, to help support this behind the scenes over time. And together with our community, we had created a name and a logo. And this was really important to us because we wanted to kind of include everybody, because it wasn't a Jen and Beatrice thing. It was a coach collective thing. And then coaches signed up to be in our database, which was in a Google spreadsheet. And then, unfortunately, that was not as mobile friendly. So a very kind web designer helped us launch a database on our website. And that's it in a nutshell. There was a lot more work in between. But we also had a public Facebook page, a public LinkedIn, and an Instagram as well.
Before Beatrice jumps in, how long did all of that take? You've described a sort of the launch process. What was that kind of time frame?
The time frame from idea, the flint that Beatrice had sparked in the Animus Lounge to launching our first public database and our public Facebook page was only 2 weeks.
Wow, great, excellent. Beatrice, do you want to add something?
Yeah, just talking about matching the two, the problem and the solution, as it were. And I'm sure Jen will go in more detail about that because marketing was her area where she was really focused. And I think getting these two to meet was a result of two things. So first of all, marketing and the marketing strategy that Jen led together with a team, but also partnerships. And I feel that if there is anyone who wants to start the social impact initiative, these two things have given us a lot of learnings that, you know, we're happy to share.
We'll definitely dig into the learnings. It's really great you bring up marketing and, sorry, the second part was
partnerships.
Great. That makes really good to hear that, because I would guess, let's say, rather than know this, that a lot of people watching this and thinking about social impact might go marketing. Like, that feels very commercial. It feels very business oriented. And I wonder if perhaps one or both of you can say something about the role of marketing or something like this.
Well, if the ultimate goal is to serve people around the world and reach them in time of need, how the hell are we going to serve them if they don't know that we exist? So marketing is just getting your name out there and reaching who you want to serve. And that's what we tried to do. And all of our marketing material, it wasn't icky. It was very empathetic. We shared resources. And even when we did our branding, it was about being friendly, being warm, being inviting, and letting people know that they weren't alone.
And I think that's a really good point, Nick, about marketing, because that's such a scary word for a lot of coaches. I know it was for me. You know, I thought, oh, you need to be this like specialist or, you know, marketing. And in our internal communication, we were really mindful about that, because we recognized that our internal coaches were part of the solution to our marketing or getting the word out there. So you know, Jen, together with the marketing team, we came up with a solution to position this as raising awareness about the existence of this initiative and getting as many people to benefit from this support, which is a much, you know, it's still the same thing, but it's just a much nicer way to position what marketing actually means.
Yeah, the skills underneath it are the same, but the way you frame it feels very different, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You talked earlier about how you recruited 17 people, I think you said. And I think a lot of people listening to might go like, "Woof, how does that work? Like, was the cost involved, or how did you manage the logistical issues, or what were the personal challenges that came from quite a few people suddenly being part of something?" Like, I wonder if you could talk to the challenge and the sort of the importance of getting people on board, but also managing that.
So we realize that we have so many talented minds in our community. Not only did we have professional trained coaches, we also had people who had extensive marketing backgrounds. For example, Jonathan Hammond, 30 years of marketing background. Nikki Trott, she's one of our marketing, like, people had so much professional skills behind them that when we asked for help, they were willing to jump in and manage these different things. We knew that we couldn't do it alone because that would just lead to burnout for me and Beatrice. So we learned how to delegate and to trust in our team members. And recruiting, honestly, was not difficult because people just really wanted to shine in their areas and contribute. This was especially before we had clients. You know, Olivia, a couple other team members had to build the database. And we just wanted to give people the opportunity to lend their talents to this great initiative.
And it wasn't even hard, because I think the key thing there, because we didn't have anything to offer, right? All we had to offer was, do you want to do some free work pro bono? Additionally to the free coaching that you're offering, right? So it's not a very compelling job opportunity, but I think the combination of inspiration, and also I think we were actually very, not intentionally, but we just capitalized on that inspiration and continued to build on that momentum, which I feel is so essential especially when you're building something that's voluntary. We continued building that momentum, and people just wanted to help. Like, we weren't even able to get to find a position for everyone who wanted to help. There was just so much desire to contribute.
Yeah, I also wanted to add something that was really amazing. There were people who wanted to jump into roles. They said, I don't know much in this area, but I'm willing to learn. And we absolutely love that, because not only was being on our team an opportunity to contribute to something larger, but also we love that it was also an opportunity for some of our team members to learn about different areas. Like, Samara handled our social media posting, and she did an amazing job, for example. And she had done a bit of it before, but I think all of us, including Beatrice and I, we got to learn so many new skills being on Support Haven.
I wonder if I can put you on the spot by asking, around the people side of things, like, what are some of the biggest challenges for you that you had to overcome, either logistically or emotionally or in whatever fashion you think, but to leverage the power of a community, there's certain things you have to overcome. I'm curious what your lessons were for yourself.
I think, and maybe we'll do this in a ping pong fashion. We'll do one and then trade, and then do one and then trade. But for us, I can speak for both of us. I think we had to let go of the need to be perfect. And actually our internal motto was, done is better than perfect. Because in such an uncertain time and with such fast desire to launch, we really had to let go of everything needing to be like the best it could possibly be. And that was something that we also instilled as one of our team values as well, our internal values. And I think that was one of the biggest learnings.
Yeah, and I think, just going back to the question, I think it was around communication. Or what was the question?
My question was really what you learned from the challenge of bringing on so many people whether from your perspective it was emotional or logistical or whatever it might be. I'm just curious what some of the kind of lessons were for you.
I think there was a mix of things. I think one thing that we didn't anticipate necessarily was the amount of educating people, because our coaches, the group of coaches, they were our messengers or the people who would help us spread the word, and that was consistent effort over time. So I think that was a really big learning for us, and because we have been building on that inspiration and momentum, that has really helped us to get their buy-in and, you know, consistently support us with the marketing or raising awareness piece. And then I guess inside, within the team, Jen was managing most of the internal team part. And I feel that together, and Jen is one of the most structured people I've ever had the opportunity to work with. So she created very structured processes, and we focused a lot on structuring people's roles so that everything is clear. And once people had this clarity, there was this empowerment and ownership of the role, which really helped us to free us up, because it's very easy when you're at, you know, the leadership level or that level of responsibility to become responsible for every single area of business. So we managed to support and empower the team to feel responsible and accountable. So I think that was a big learning and also a big success, actually.
Great.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think we both actually learned to delegate as well. And that was enabled by having clear processes and roles. There was a week where I was just like really nearing burnout due to a number of factors. Like, hello, we're in the middle of a pandemic. Like, while people are volunteering for a support haven, everybody was also dealing with a pandemic at the same time. I needed to take a break, and I took a week off. And then the following week, Beatrice took a break and took a week off, and we covered each other. And not only that, our team was just like running so smoothly without us. And I think the having processes and systems in place was really important, because it was the explosion of remote work. It was a time when Zoom became a verb in the world. And having to do this fully remote with team members we hadn't worked with before, I think we really succeeded in our collaboration, and we're very proud of that.
When I listen to this, it seems remarkable how fast you achieved that, to be honest. I mean, you went from being super action takers, 12 o'clock, 4 o'clock, done, got it off the ground. And then within, it sounds like about 2 weeks, you had systems in place and people in place, and things were working smoothly. It wasn't even just like a clunking along. It was working smoothly to the point you could take a holiday. Amazing. And I guess I'm interested in how you went from the mental switch of leap and build the plane on the way down to having a plane. Like, what were the steps involved, if you can kind of think of those?
I mean, I can share personally and vulnerably. I reached out to a therapist at the time, knowing that I was clocking in 12 hours a day of work, even outside of Support Haven. And I recognized that my work response was a response to the subconscious or unconscious trauma of the pandemic. And I also had a coach at the time as well, who helped me slow down. So to be able to do that, high, like, yeah, we got it, this high momentum, this like frenetic, like this thing, to being able to ramp down and let go a little bit, did take some outside help. And Beatrice is an amazing woman and human, and I was able to share openly what I was feeling at the time. So I really felt like I had her support and the team's support as well.
So for you then, Jen, from listening to that, it was less about the process, the business process, let's say, or the structural process. It was actually more about self-management.
There's process and then there's self-management. You're not going to be in a headspace to create the processes and structures needed and delegate if one is not in the headspace first to believe that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love that you brought that up, and thank you for your vulnerability, Jen. And because I was actually just reflecting, oh, I feel like we've painted this in such a positive light, and it absolutely was, but there was a lot that we have learned. And I feel that, that inspiration that I was talking about earlier, in a way, has a downside as well, because when you're running on inspiration, you are literally able to work nonstop, and not really pause and realize the impact it's having on you. And we were really keen to make this impact and to, you know, to get out there to support as soon as possible. And there did come a point when, especially, I feel that we managed to anticipate a lot of the things and be proactive in managing those, which has saved us a lot of time. But of course, some things we weren't able to anticipate, and there did come a point where it was a bit too much. So I think that both of us have had to take time off, not because things were running so smoothly and it was all absolutely fine, but it was more the awareness that we have to walk the talk, basically, and practice what we preach with our clients and look after our own, you know, mental health, slowing down, you know.
Yeah,
because we had 100 coaches, 122 coaches in our database. We had over 200 coaches in the Facebook community, in our internal Facebook group, who were supporting, who were sharing, raising awareness. And then we had the public facing side, where we'd also get client inquiries as well. So it was a lot to manage.
Yeah. And the reason why I was so interested in you sharing this story, both of you, because most, you know, part of the reason for this summit is to inspire coaches to make a difference through social impact. But that's not a job in most cases. It's kind of something you're going to, you know, add on to what you're already doing, whether that's as a coach or whether it's you're working with somebody. So there is something very important about how do you do that stuff, this new stuff, and at the same time look after yourself and manage your existing work. I mean, you said, Jen, you were doing 12 hours of work even before the Support Haven stuff. That's pretty hardcore. So I guess it seems to be very important that anyone who's considering doing this does at least begin to factor in how they do self-management, right?
Yeah, I think mental health is very, very important, not just in an initiative, not just for social impact, but for any endeavor, for anyone. But there's also something that comes to mind is you don't have to recreate the wheel. If there's an existing initiative and it's already run by people, or there's some way that one could do it at a smaller scale, that's totally fine too. Like, I was thinking about some of our coaches when we ended Support Haven. It's like, okay, but we had shared the message that we hope that you guys continue volunteering in whatever way you would still like to volunteer, whether that's, you know, advertising their own Calendly link for booking or whatever it was. I think sometimes people think, oh, I need to do like this big thing to create impact. But even if you could change a few lives, I think that's incredibly powerful already.
Beatrice, anyone add anything, or shall I
move on? You can go.
Right, okay. So I guess that you know, one of the things you both mentioned is what you hadn't considered, what you hadn't factored in at the start, and the lessons you learned in a sense. And I'm curious, what were some of the things you wished you'd realized and wished you'd thought about in advance, such that you could have planned for them more effectively? Beatrice, you go for that one first.
I think Jen will have a lot to say on the more like the technical side of things. But I think for me, one of the biggest learnings was about how we raise awareness about the initiative. And I think we had this idea, and it was absolutely the right idea, because this is how you build a business, through marketing, right? And marketing through social media and other channels, trying to go to have interviews and so on. But we also started the partnership. We got to a point where we realized actually maybe we should find some other organizations that have complementary offering that we can support with. And we did sign we did find a partnership with another social impact initiative called Furlonteer. And they were working with people who have been on furlough. So we offered to give them coaching. And that was a really, really successful partnership, because I guess when we were recommended by the people who organized their initiative that they were signed up for, it was just much easier, first of all, and you could reach a much larger number of people compared to trying to start from scratch to build a following, to build credibility and all of that. And I think that was a really big learning for us as an initiative. So I think that if you think about marketing, looking at partnerships and leveraging other people's communities is a really big one.
Great, nice.
Yeah, that was huge. We got a lot, most of our bookings from the Furlonteer partnership. So Beatrice did an amazing job there. I would add that in terms of learnings and what we would have done differently, I think mapping out the customer journey from the beginning would have helped, actually, because that would have helped us understand usability. So for example, when we launched, we had a database and there were a lot of different categories for booking, and the original database wasn't mobile friendly. But once again, hell yeah, we launched in 2 weeks from inception to launch, so we're really proud of that. So that's just part of prototyping, I guess. But at the same time, we wish we would have kind of been in the user's mind a little bit more, because that would have made it easier for people to book, and maybe less categories would have just, yeah, made it easier for people to choose. In the end, we had a really mobile friendly website, but then there was the secondary challenge that came from that, which was that it was hard to manage then the website, because the website had to be manually edited. And if we could wave a magic wand, which is, you know, if you could wave a magic wand, that famous coaching question that everybody asks clients, what would you wish for? We would have wished for some way to have the database be editable and easy to manage from the beginning. But yeah, once again, we're really proud with what we have.
100%, yeah. You should be proud. I mean, I guess I'm, you know, from this conversation, I'm kind of thinking, especially from what you said, Beatrice, around the partnerships and the extent to which Furlonteer became such a big partner for you, is how important it is for you to focus on what is the thing that I really, really bring? What's my irreplaceable strength that I'm bringing that makes this happen? And then what can I build around that that means I'm not doing stuff I'm not so good at or not so experienced at or need to reinvent the wheel for, as Jen said earlier? That seems to me like a big lesson, is who's the me in this that's irreplaceable? And then what are the other bits I need to build around that?
Yeah, absolutely. And also just to add to what Jen was saying, there are just so many moving pieces, and actually you've given us some advice as well, and we really valued that, because you have all this experience, so you were able to help us prevent a lot of the things. But I think we nailed a lot of things, and we are very proud, and we did think a lot about the user experience in terms of the clients who would book for us. But I think one of the learnings and what Jen was saying is that actually we didn't only have one set of clients. We also had the internal coaches who in a way were also clients, because they were building their profiles and so on. So there did come a point where we were almost managing requests and questions and technical questions coming from potential clients and from the internal coaches. So, and you know, we had 200 coaches and then lots of external clients, and that became a bit more difficult to manage. And that's one thing that we didn't anticipate. So if you have a large, if you're managing an initiative with a large team, you need to consider their experience as well when it comes to the personal experience or the community management aspect, but also the technical or the tools or the process that they're going through and that side of the journey.
Yeah. And I remember that conversation, Beatrice, and it feels to me like a key lesson is, how do you stop yourself becoming the single point of failure in a process? Because if the client or the internal coach could manage themselves, then you're not the one that's having to go into the database and do all the typing and that sort of thing. I feel as, again, like another great lesson is how do I make sure I'm not that thing that's so relied upon to do every aspect of the work. It's really good lessons there. Jen, anything you wanted to add to that?
No, I think it's all about empowerment, empowering whoever joins to own and be able to do the best that they can do, empowering our team members, and just having the right, I guess, tools in place for that.
Great, thank you. On that note around tools can cost money. And so one of the things, I'm always conscious that when I see people venture into this kind of area, it can often leave them out of pocket quite significantly, either because they leave another piece of their income generating work to the side, or they spend money to build a site. And I'm curious, like, how did you manage the, you know, you don't need to go too detailed if you don't want, but how did you manage the financial part of this? How did you sort of navigate that challenge?
Would you like me to take that?
Sure.
I think the very surprising part about that is how we basically managed without any huge, you know, there was no huge pot of funding or anything like that. We did come to a point where the maintenance of the website was going to cost some money. And actually, Jen was the one who funded a portion of that. But besides that, besides the cost that she covered for the website, we basically did not have any other costs other than the time and the energy that we put towards this. And I think that, you know, this is a pretty amazing achievement to be able to do that without any funding. And again, this goes back to what you can create and how much you can build just based on inspiration and feeling galvanized to make a difference.
Yeah, I think so. Magically, without zero funding, this was able to happen. It was possible that this happened, and I think it was because our volunteers had such big hearts, and we as team members also respected that each person was a volunteer. And so that meant if somebody needed to take time off or couldn't get to something, no worries, everybody's a volunteer. This is how it works on nonprofits. None of us were paid. And so I think that gave us a good base of self-compassion and compassion for each other. And I think that perfectly mirrored what was going on in the world right at that moment, and still right now, where more compassion is needed.
And did you guys have a system for nurturing the relationships? Because it sounds to me like this was a very relationship-based endeavor, right? I mean, they had to be on your side and you had to be working well together. Did you have systems for managing that, or was it very ad hoc and you just kind of bumped into people virtually as needed? Like, how did that work?
So we had, in the beginning, Beatrice and I took different pockets of what we needed to do because, of course, it was a lot to manage. And then later on, we said, hey, we're all working towards the same goal. So somewhere maybe in the middle, I don't know at what time point in the journey, we aligned everybody. And once a week, we sent all team email updates. So everybody was in the loop. Because we had people on our advisory board, council, PR, social media, database. And so I think having central communication really helped. And within our community of coaches as well in the Facebook group.
Yeah, and I think this communication piece was key. And I feel that perhaps because of our personality types, and also because perhaps our background as well, we really recognize the importance of that. And that really helped to maintain the internal support from the team and the coaches and all of that. And I really liked actually something, because Jen had so much experience already in nonprofit. That experience was really invaluable, and it really taught me a lot of lessons, because I'm someone with very high expectations, first of all of myself, but that is sometimes of others as well. So I think just right from the beginning, Jen really helped me to get that this is a group of volunteers and we cannot expect people to do more than they're willing and able. And that really resonated, and I felt a really deep understanding of what she meant. And I feel that actually expecting less or not expecting anything from people was actually what empowered them to give even more. So that was just so beautiful to watch.
It's really great to listen to this, because I was just thinking, you guys said you met each other 2 days before you launched this, right? Was that right?
Yeah.
And it's amazing how well you complemented each other. I was going back to the Symposium by Plato, where I don't know if you read that all the years ago, the idea that human beings were once split in half, like Zeus got so angry at human beings, he split them in half and then spread them asunder across the world. But there's always this kind of complementary partner. Obviously, normally it's talking about a love partner, but I think there's almost something about how do you have complementary partners within a business or an endeavor like this. And I wanted to what extent somebody who's embarking upon this, who perhaps doesn't feel the confidence or the competence to go gung-ho by themselves, I wonder to what extent, how do you guys, I don't know if you've got an answer for this at all, but I wonder how that you might go about finding that complementary partner and how important that is.
Yeah, I really feel that with us, it was just pure luck. It was like, it just goes back to what Jen was saying. It literally feels like the stars aligned, like everything aligned for us to get together. Because I know in startups or in any organizations, people struggle so much to find the right co-founder. And having this is just so important, especially when you're building something that's, you know, it was quite a large scale initiative and moved very quickly. So it's not like we built it to 100 people over a year. Mm. It was literally overnight. Yeah. I feel it was just pure luck, to be honest. It's just, honestly, for me, the key was trusting my intuition. And I think Jen did the same when she came on board.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're extremely lucky to have met. I couldn't have imagined anybody else who would have even compelled me to do this, honestly. But at the same time, if we're thinking about anybody who's watching this and what is applicable other than, like, you know, praying and just like waiting, I think, you know, some early signs are Beatrice and I had, I think, connected on LinkedIn prior. I already knew Beatrice from the Animus Lounge because she has always been posting helpful material. So I believe that our relationship and our chemistry already started before Support Haven. So I was like, oh, Beatrice Zornick, heard of Beatrice Zornick, have seen her. And I believe that from the beginning, I knew that there was a vibe. I liked the stuff that she was sharing. It seemed like we shared similar values. When she posted in the Animus Lounge, I was like, oh, that we were thinking of the same thing at the same time. So I think we already had so many compatibilities. So it was luck, but it was also, as she said, trusting our intuition. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I would add is even a good match, let's say you've met your dream soulmate in the world and you're just like, this is the one I want to be with. There's still work involved. And what I think Beatrice and I had was really direct communication, even from the beginning. You know, with a team, there's like, I forgot the stages. Anyway, they're storming. And there were days when we did have a little miscommunication and we just checked in on each other. It's like, is that what you meant? Or what did you mean? And I think setting a tone of direct communication built our relationship to a point where we can now celebrate it and see how beautiful our co-founder relationship is. But it does take, you have to nurture it like a garden. And you also have to trust your intuition and you have to pay attention to the signs and think, is this somebody that I would like to work with? So yeah.
Yeah, great.
I love that you mentioned the stages of a group. And so we formed very quickly. And then we went straight, within days, I think we went into the storming part of it. And I think what really helped us to navigate that was our self-awareness and realizing what we're, you know, really separating. And the fact that we were coaches really helped, right? And when you're a coach, you're like, what is my stuff here? And we took our stuff and we took it to our, you know, coach or therapist or whatever. And then we came back and we had an open conversation about how we deal with that. And it wasn't even a big deal. It's just the normal kind of things that happen in that storming part of the development of a group. But it's just really important to address those things from the get-go, because that just helped to strengthen our relationship rather than weaken it. Yeah. As I was just reflecting about what makes a good co-founder, and I didn't give a very good explanation, but I think the other thing that was in terms of my intuition about Jen is that I just noticed right away, I don't know, you just notice in some people there's like this spark of intelligence and smart and reliable, and I just had that. And you sometimes just have that about people, also from her content and from the way she was communicating. It was just like little bits of information that compounded the intuition, and that's how we got together. That's how we found our half of the wheel.
Yeah.
So much love.
It sounds to me there's a relationship too between the way you handled moving from idea to execution very quickly and the way you handled meeting a co-founder and acting quickly. There's a trust and a belief that the only way to test it out is through action, not through thinking, contracting to the nth degree and then going, you know what, this isn't going to work. It's just like, let's do it and see what's going to come from it.
Yeah, I think there's probably benefit in everything you just said in terms of contracting and building that relationship, you know, especially if you're building something that you're planning to do very long term. And you don't know each other very well. I mean, our relationship was ideal, but I can really imagine that most relationships are not that easy sailing. So, yeah, I think everything you said is probably, you know, essential as well.
Hmm. We're getting to the end of our conversation, believe it or not. That's whizzed by, and I just wonder if we can reflect back on where you got to with it. So when you look back, what are some of the things you're most proud of, and what would you say you achieved through the project, if you could kind of summarize it?
I think perhaps one learning actually as well is the fact that ideally you'd have a way to measure the success in a quantitative way in terms of like number of calls or, you know, feedback forms and all those things, which, you know, it wasn't realistic in such a small organization. And being able to centralize all that information, because you would have had to have a centralized way of assigning clients in order to see the actual quantitative results, which just wasn't possible. But we measured the success in terms of keeping the initiative going for 3 months. And that was our objective, because we were in a way pioneers in creating something like this. There wasn't any other initiative that we could use as a model for what we were going to do. There haven't been that many pandemics that affected the global population for us to be able, oh, that's what people did last time, right? So we were pioneers in this in a way. And we said, well, what can we measure? Well, we'll just do our best for 3 months. You know, we'll put as much energy and as much as we can into it for those 3 months. And hopefully we'll manage to touch as many people's lives as possible. And I really feel that from that perspective, we achieved our objective and feel quite successfully as well.
Yeah, I agree. So on the client side, we had these really beautiful testimonials, some of which we also shared on our social media channels, but it was about these client transformations, about their stories. When we got together with the coaches to celebrate wins, and even in our Facebook group, we asked people to share, and people were telling these heartwarming stories of how their client lives were so wonderfully transformed. And our coaches themselves, some of them, for example, were going for qualification and were not qualified yet, but got a number of sessions in so that they could go for their 40 hours. And so not only that, our coaches felt like, and we were surprised by this when we were having our kind of download and celebration of wins as we were closing, people said it just felt so nice to be part of something bigger. And I think in a time of uncertainty and trauma, in the world, people really need a place to feel like they're part of something bigger and that we're all part of a shared humanity. And I think this was a great success for us.
I mean, listening to Beatrice talking about the measurement thing, it strikes me that it's better to do something and not measure it than to do nothing, because you can't measure it. You know, it's almost like, okay, well, at least you can look back and say we did something. I was thinking about the model you mentioned, that I think it's Tuckman and Jensen, was forming, storming, norming, performing, and mourning. And they added that fifth one, mourning, later on in its kind of developmental stage. And I'm curious about how the relationship with the end of Support Haven, how that came about, because obviously you decided to bring it to an end. Emotionally, how did you deal with that? What was your processing of that? And how did you logistically deal with bringing it to an end? Perhaps you can speak to that.
So I think one thing is that we, as we said earlier, we started this with zero funding. There was no salaries being paid. You know, everyone was working on a voluntary basis. And I think we recognize that this is not sustainable long-term, right? You can't just expect people to keep working indefinitely at no cost. And I think the other thing was that we said we'd start this during lockdown. So right when lockdown hit, in some countries it didn't even start by the time we launched the initiative. And we'll support for 3 months, which was basically roughly as long as lockdown was going to take. And by the end of the initiative, so by the time we reached our time frame that we agreed on, we realized that actually the complexities of COVID are much bigger, much very different in every country, and that it would probably require a different time, a different type of initiative to support the long-term effects of COVID. And I really feel that we achieved our objective just in terms of offering that support during lockdown, which was the peak when everyone was so confused and didn't know what was going on. What would you add to that, Din?
Beautifully stated. I would add on the process side that the close and the ramp down and the exit comms are incredibly important, especially when you have a global community of coaches and you have people who had been booking sessions. We wanted to do this elegantly. So first we checked with our internal team. Hey, what do you guys think? We're thinking about ending it in the 3 months as we initially set out to do. The team said, we understand. Then we told our internal coach community in our Facebook group, so everybody got a heads up and the why. Then we told the public as well by putting out social media posts that say, hey, last chance for booking, we're going to ramp down, explaining the why. We had a celebration event so the coaches could feel celebrated, and we shared these heartwarming stories on our wins. And then we posted a blog summarizing our achievements, the thank you to all our team members. Thank you for everybody involved on our website. So I think what a lot of initiatives or companies miss is this close, because you're not working with customers, you're working with people. And these people have been invested in this, or who were rooting for you and needed help. And so we kept our empathetic, compassionate values until the very end, even till close. And that's something we definitely can celebrate.
I really like that, Jen. It feels so important that if you're going to do that kind of project, that you bring it to an end rather than just let it kind of fizzle off. And that's really great to hear. Okay, guys, we've come to the end of our conversation. I guess I'd like to end by asking you, what's next for you? Where are you heading next with your coaching career or whatever else you're doing?
You can go.
Okay. So now that I have, you know, all this free time on my hands, I'm focused on writing a memoir. So I lost both of my parents by the age of 33. And I went through my journey of self-love through that and forgiveness. So that's my main priority right now. I also am an empowerment coach, and I'm building my coaching business, and I help people design a life and work that they dream of. So these are really my focus areas right now, and doing more public speaking, being on YouTube, just helping more people at scale.
And how could somebody find out more about you, Jen? Do you have a website?
Yes, jenmchoy.com, or I'm on literally all social media channels except for TikTok at jenmchoy.
And that's Jen with two N's, right?
Jen with two N's, yeah.
Wonderful, thank you, Jen. And Beatrice, how about you?
Yeah, so what's next? For me, it's continuing to support highly sensitive people. I'm just, as a highly sensitive person who's really suffered from not understanding myself, I'm really passionate to support other highly sensitive people in their career or starting their business, as I've done as well. And I'm, as you know, I'm training to become a coach supervisor as well with you. And I'm also working with Catherine Watkin as part of her private community of heart-centered business owners. And I feel that this really leverages my strengths in terms of community and supporting other business owners to grow their business. So, yeah, that's me.
That's great. Thank you, Beatrice. Well, guys, thank you so much and good luck to both of you with your next endeavors. But thank you so much for being part of this conversation and congratulations on what you did. I think it was astounding. When I first came across it and we first spoke, I was like, you achieved that in 2 weeks? That's absolutely mind-blowing. So congratulations on what you did. It's absolutely fabulous and so many great lessons from this conversation. So thank you.